Welcome to a Saturday afternoon. Beautiful, beautiful day on the Central Coast. Clear. Oh, I got to take that back. Cloudy, cool, upper 50s. My kind of weather. But when you come from a desert where it's 120 in the shade in the summertime, this is paradise for me. Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I can tell you that wintertime here on the Central Coast is a dream come true for me. I talk with a lot of people who moved here from snowbound parts of the country, and they are happy they're not shoveling snow in the wintertime. And I just got tired of shoveling sunshine, if you will, or the lava rocks, whatever way you want to put that. We don't have to shovel anything here. We are here to provide you information that can help you, that can guide you, that can give you new insights into yourself and into the world around you or the world within you. And to that end, we're going to be taking a look at happiness. What is it? How do we attain it? And where does it come from? And, can we buy it? Is somebody marketing happiness for us? I mean, that would be kind of cool if there was a company out there that was doing that. As a matter of fact, that's interesting because we were talking before the program about, and we, my guest, Robert Mack, the author of Happiness from the Inside Out, we're discussing that very thing of marketing. And Robert, welcome to our program. It's a pleasure to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And we were chatting a little bit about the whole concept of marketing and so forth, and maybe to some extent, some might say, well, yes, they are marketing happiness to us through the various movies that are coming out this December in the theaters, the Christmas Carol from Disney and this movie and that, and the iPod and the newest gadget and the newest hat wear and the newest this and that, and on, and the list is endless. And we think that's, and a lot of people actually do think, maybe not consciously, that brings them happiness.
Yeah, I think it's true. We sort of have a lot of, I think, misconceptions about what happiness is and what happiness isn't. And a lot of it, at least for me growing up, was based around this idea of sort of synthetic happiness, that somehow you could synthesize happiness out of the conditions and circumstances of your life. And by and large, science is telling us that that's simply not true.
I find it interesting, too, that they're synthesizing. Thanks a lot. Synthesizing, manufacturing, just about everything, right down to the food that we eat. And we're not talking about the chefs in the back room in the kitchen contriving these wonderful dishes. We're talking about scientists in the laboratories starting to play around with the genetic makeup of the various foods that are here on the planet, to the extent that we never know what it is that we're buying in the grocery stores anymore because they don't have to tell us.
So
these are the kinds of things that we're sort of faced with, but you are helping us to do, so to speak, an about face or an internal face to take a look at happiness, as your book title says, from the inside, the art and science of fulfillment. And I find that fascinating because more and more people today, it's sort of becoming the vogue, if you will, are connecting, though they never were separate, I'm sure you'll address that, art and science when it comes to who and what we are as human beings and what it is that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting, and you make such a great point there. In the last, if you look at the science and you look at the statistics, you find basically that in the last 50 years, as Americans, as in large parts of Europe, large parts of Asia, we've experienced unprecedented material and economic growth. So much so that what they've been sort of referring to this era just prior to the recession as the era of satisfied expectations, which meant we had more people living the American dream than ever before in the history of mankind. That's quite, you know, incredible. We also had incredible technological advancements. Crime has been on the decline since about 1970, 1980. In a lot of ways, life has been better than ever. Of course, this is just sort of prior to the recession. At the same time, in the last 50 years, we've also experienced unprecedented levels of depression. We have 10 times as much depression as ever. We have more suicide than ever. And even for folks like you and I that are non-clinical and don't necessarily have any kind of deep, dark, depressive episodes, even for us, happiness ratings haven't budged since about 1950. And so what that comes to tell you, really, is that happiness has less to do with sort of the conditions and circumstances of your life. In fact, scientists tend to say that about 10% of your happiness is a result of things like marriage, how much money you make, education, race, gender, ethnicity, all those things together only count for about 10% of how happy or unhappy you are. The other 90% are other things. 50% of that 90% is about genetics, so 50% of it is sort of inherited, it's in your DNA. And then the other 40% is what we call voluntary or sort of controllable factors. Those are the things like sort of mindset, whether you're spiritual or not, how much meaning and purpose you find in your life, but things that are largely controllable. So that's sort of, you know, when we're talking about sort of happiness from the inside out, we're really talking about, we're talking about genes, but even more than that, we're talking about those things that you can control despite and sort of regardless of the conditions and circumstances that surround you.
And those are the things that we're going to talk about in this program today as we continue talking with Robert Mackey as my guest. He is the author of Happiness from the Inside Out, The Art and Science of Fulfillment. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live on the internet, and that is at richarddugan.com. That's Richard, double D in the middle there, RichardDugan.com. And there's a fairly good size listen live link right there on the right hand side of the top of the page. Top of every page, as a matter of fact, so you can't miss it. We'd love for you to tune in every Saturday. We also have archives at the radio show's page where all of the interviews that we've done for Tell Me Your Story since we started this program September 7th of 2007, and I should correct myself, September the 8th of 2007. And we are going to continue with our program with Robert Mack in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
Are addictions ruining your life? Have you lost hope and long to discover help for a brighter tomorrow? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and fast forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
Santa Barbara County Fire Department reminds motorists the law requires you to pull to the right and allow emergency vehicles to pass. When you hear sirens or see red lights, pull to the right side of the road and stop. Failure to do so can cause serious accidents or delays in arriving at the scene of an emergency. If you find yourself behind an emergency vehicle, stay at least 300 feet behind them in case of a sudden stop. If you are a pedestrian, stay out of the street and keep children close. Santa Barbara County Fire Department reminds you to pull to the right and sit tight.
New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. We're giving you choices, and one of those choices is happiness. Believe it or not, you can't pull out your wallet and the credit card or go online and pay for it. Well, you know what? Robert Mack, my guest and the author of Happiness from the Inside Out, can I pull out my wallet and my credit card and go online or go to a store and buy happiness?
For most of us, not any kind of sort of long standing sort of happiness.
Okay, so there's the hitch right there.
Yes, exactly. You can certainly buy a moment of euphoria. You can certainly buy a moment of, you know, and you can certainly buy have a little therapy retail. Mm-hmm. But, you know, largely happiness is something that, you know, you really can't ever actually hold hostage anyway. I mean, it sort of comes in moments, and you can do things to sort of encourage or persuade yourself to be and live a happier life. But it's not something that you can sort of ever say, all right, I'm happy now forevermore.
Yeah.
Not so much. And the other thing that they found sort of with respect to money is that, you know, once you sort of are able to basically meet sort of basic necessities and you're living above a level of subsistence, additional dollars do very little with respect to happiness. And so, of course, if you can't pay your bills at all, you're not able to eat, or you don't have food and shelter, of course, additional dollars are going to make an incredible difference in your life, especially emotionally, especially with respect to your happiness. But for most of us, it's just not the case.
I want us to draw a little diagram, a little map, if you will. But first, you mentioned something in the first segment about the happiness quotient, something along those lines. And I have heard in recent days or weeks on the news, they are now actually running a comparable index along with the consumer price index, product index, consumer happiness index. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah. It's funny because and that's so sort of poignant that you brought that up, Richard. At first glance, it seems almost, some folks might say, that sounds awful silly. That sounds awful. But when you think about why sort of we live our lives and what we sort of want to accomplish in our lives, whether it's a great car, a great career, we want a great relationship, we want a great body, we want incredible health, whatever it is that you want to accomplish or achieve in your life, you've got to remember that ultimately what you're really after is a feeling. And we call that feeling sometimes happiness, sometimes we call it success, but it's ultimately at the end of the day a feeling. So what better way to sort of measure or measure your life, I think, and measure your success in any pursuit other than with happiness or what you call emotional well-being, because at the end of the day, that's what we're really after. So yeah, they're doing that. Interestingly enough, all across the world, they've done that. I've heard talk about it in France, and of course, Bhutan, but other places across the world, they've been considering, not necessarily replacing, GDP or GNP with a happiness index, but at least complementing it with one.
All right, I'm going to throw at you sort of a multiple question here, but I'll try to keep it simple because this is where I want you to draw for us a map.
Okay.
We first need to define our terms. Number one, let's for the sake of where we are right now in the interview, I want you to define from your perspective what is happiness. Number two, a part two, if you will, where inside are we going to go to find it, to create it, whatever it is that we need to do so that we can have that happiness from the inside? Where inside are we going to get it?
Wow, that's beautiful. What a question. I've never been asked that question before. I'd say that, for me, when I think about happiness, I mean, I'm sort of Aristotelian in a sense, and I love Aristotle. And, one of the things he said was, essentially, that a happy life was one that was lived in accordance with its own sort of nature, and so it's really about being clear about your values in life, and then doing your best to sort of live your life in accordance with those values. And so, for some people, it means one thing; for other people, it means something different. But at the end of the day, it's really a feeling or emotional state that you're after, and it's an emotional state that doesn't so much feel like bliss all the time. It doesn't feel like euphoria all the time. I'd say that the feeling that I most associate with happiness is a feeling of appreciation. It's a feeling of love. It's a feeling of well-being and being sort of at peace with yourself. And more than anything else, I think of happiness as sort of its health of the mind and its health of the emotions and spirit. Ultimately, that's what it is for me. I'd say that, if you're looking for the second question, as far as sort of finding where happiness sort of exists within you, my basic sort of philosophy is that happiness is really who we are. It's sort of like, our most basic state. That by and large, in the same way that most of us sort of exist in a place of health, that's sort of your natural state, and that things go wrong and you become unhealthy, the same is true of happiness. That sort of, happiness is health of the mind and health of, your spirit. And so, where inside? Well, it's everywhere inside. It's in the very cells of your body. Our cells believe it or not, have memories, and they sort of encode, you know, sort of emotions. And so you can live a certain period of your life thinking in a certain way, feeling a certain way, and behaving a certain way, and literally the cells of your body begin to sort of memorize that way of being, and they sort of reproduce that over and over again. Of course, happiness also exists in your brain, quite literally, with respect to neurotransmitters, and often some of the things that we do to sort of solve depression or solve deep dysphoria are things that are aimed at either turning on or turning off these little centers inside of your brain that basically produce neurotransmitters. And so it sort of exists both in your mind, I think, in your brain physically. It also sort of exists in your body. And so it's a difficult question. I think a complimentary question is, well, what can I do in order to create a happier life? And that's much simpler, right? When we're talking about creating a happier life, you're really talking about thinking, speaking, and behaving in ways that produce more sort of emotional payoff, or better, I guess, more positive emotional payoff. And the one thing that scientists have found more than anything else is finding a way to appreciate more consistently the things that are going on in your life, the things that you have in your life, the people that you have in your life. So if there's one thing that happiness is, it's really finding things to appreciate.
Gratitude, grace, if you will.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. You know, they've done these incredible studies, Richard. I think you really appreciate this, and your listeners will appreciate this. They've looked at, they've measured all kinds of variables and all kinds of factors. And what they basically found is that the one factor that sort of was, that most happy people had in common was that they were optimists. For whatever reason, and so you can sort of follow these optimists, and people say, well, they call you Pollyanna or whatnot for being an optimist. And the truth is, so they've done these studies, and they've taken these optimists, and they've compared them versus pessimists. And what they found were, largely, is that optimists believed they were right. They believed that they had these, they were wearing these rose-colored glasses, but that and the world was going to turn out okay, and that they'd be healthy, and they'd live a good long life. And pessimists, of course, didn't believe any of that was necessarily was going to happen, and they thought of themselves as sort of realist. And as they followed these people out over the course of their lives, what they found is that both optimists and pessimists are both right. The optimist, at the end of the day, lived 6 to 7 years longer. They experienced fewer doctor visits. They experienced less job burnout. They experience better relationships. They get married earlier, stay married longer, are happier in those relationships. And then by and large, pessimists, on the other hand, of course, don't experience those positive benefits. And to a large extent, that's because they don't believe they will experience them, and so they don't persist sometimes in the face of adversity. So it's a complicated picture, but the idea basically is that, sort of surprisingly enough, that a lot of our classic sort of self-help gurus were right to the extent that you often in life find what you look for, or you get what you believe.
Yeah, I've heard that. Although I've never been, referred to as Pollyanna. Usually it was Little Miss Mary Sunshine.
That's so much more pleasant. It's so much less condescending, I think. Little Miss, I don't know. I think it actually is more condescending, but
yes,
I do
is.
Love that. Yes. Little Miss Mary Sunshine. Well, I'm going to have to use that one.
Well, I have to say that I have probably been, in spite of, and I know my mother would probably go along with this one, that I probably worried an awful lot in my life. Some of that could be hereditary as far as my Irish heritage in particular. A wonderful quote by Yeats, and I wish I could remember the exact quote, but the percentages were usually about 95% worry to 10% joy, ecstasy, and excitement. I was lucky to have made it this far, but I've always been fairly optimistic, very, very, usually fairly positive. And in spite of the negative or pessimism of some folks who might be around me at the time, I said, well, okay, I can appreciate that. But at the same time, you don't know. I mean, you're speculating just like I'm speculating. And it sure feels a heck of a lot better to speculate in the affirmative and the positive than in the negative.
Well, see, that's exactly it, Richard. It's easy, I think, and I think sometimes it's more natural. And if you look at our sort of what we've sort of inherited from our ancestors from an evolutionary standpoint, it made much more sense traditionally or historically to look at what was going wrong in your world or in your environment, because those things that were going wrong required your immediate attention. So if there's a drought, or if there's a tiger that's attacking you in the wild, it's really important that it gets your attention and it holds your attention for long enough for you to either escape or fight off whatever adversary was sort of there. Mm-hmm. And so from a historical standpoint, from an evolutionary standpoint, it sort of makes sense that you pay more attention to the negative things than the positive things. We call that negativity bias in the psychology world. But you're right, sort of today, and what that meant is that for a long time, we all sort of had a canned explanation for why we were so unhappy. Well, we're trying to survive. It's okay. It's part of our evolutionary sort of evolutionary history. But as time has moved on, now, you know, the pessimism and the cynicism doesn't make so much sense. And at the end of the day, since it not only plays itself out in a way that it confirms itself, but it also means that no matter how justified or right or valid you are in your negative assessment of what may come or what exists now in this moment, you're still ruining your moment. You're still ruining your life in that moment. And so that's ultimately the question. It's like, okay, yes, maybe things really, really suck. That's true. However, what that means is that if there's anything left to be saved or sacrificed, it's how you feel. You can still find a way to feel good despite circumstances and conditions not being lined up in a way that are perfect. You know,
yeah.
So you're absolutely right about that, Richard. I agree with you.
If you were to, as you've stated, you know, if you think that things are going to turn out badly, you're right. And if you think that things are going to turn out good, you're also right. It's all a matter of perspective. How does one who is sitting there going, look, all right, I know I'm the pessimist. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel good to be the pessimist, and I've been this way for so many years. Probably I was taught this from my parents and my siblings, and I'm really tired of it. How do I start to shift?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that you bring that up because for me, Richard, this is also very personal. I was that, you know, I sort of was that guy. You know, I experienced very deep episodes of and very dark episodes of depression for a very long period of my life, and I wanted to make a shift, and I didn't know how. And what I came to realize about sort of happiness and optimism and all these things is that, to a large extent, it's very simple. It's not always easy, but it's very simple, meaning that it's just a question of practice. That largely, pessimism is practicing a particular mindset that isn't supportive and isn't particularly empowering. And optimism, likewise, is practicing sort of a mindset or attitude that is very supportive. And it's just like sort of learning to walk. It's like learning a new language. Everything is sort of difficult until it's easy. And so it's just a question of practicing it long enough that you become good at it. And it sounds sort of so simplistic, but that's really the truth of the matter. It's consistency, and you don't try to make the quantum leap. So it's not like one day you get laid off, and the next day you say, "Wow, it's the best thing that ever happened." Of course not. It's not the best thing that ever happened, right? You just reach for those for that thought. It's a better feeling thought.
Yeah.
It's the best feeling thought, and so it's really about telling a better feeling story, but it's got to be based in truth.
Yeah, I was sharing with a friend of mine. He was wanting to make a shift in his life, and he says, "You know, I've always been this way for most of my life, and then I did this thing, and I made the big change. But now I'm doing this other thing, and I'm back to where I was before I made that big change. And I really want to." I says, "Well, why don't you do this? You know, you have access to the facility that you need. So rather than trying to get right back into the 5 days a week kind of shifting mode." Just pick one day. Just pick Monday. All right? Go down and do your thing for 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the most, whatever, and then walk away.
Yeah.
And you've done it for one day.
Wow, Richard, beautiful. Because and the interesting thing is, it's like, you know, some of these truths, when you look at psychology, you look at really any science, and you can, especially with psychology though, you can sort of boil it all down, all of the complex sort of the scientifically rigorous sort of and very complex theories, you can boil them down to about 15 or 10 simple truths. And one of the simplest truths is just take baby steps until you're full grown. And sometimes those baby steps have to almost be laughably small, like laughably simple. Like for me, I remember for a long time, I was used to playing sports. I didn't love the idea of showing up to a gym every day and getting on a treadmill. It felt like sort of a hamster wheel or, you know, lifting weights and things like that. And so what I eventually brought myself to sort of commit to is saying, listen, Rob, just show up to the gym. Period. Mm-hmm. Just show up. And if you just show up once or twice a week, that's all that's required. That'll be showing up once or twice more than you've been showing up in the past.
Yeah.
If you just do that one thing, and what often happens is you get this escalation of commitment. So you show up, and you didn't commit to doing anything there. You didn't even commit to getting on the treadmill. You just showed up. But once you're there, you're like, okay, I'm here now. Let me put 5 minutes on the treadmill. Before you know it, it's 10 minutes. And then you leave.
Yeah.
Right? But it's really about finding a way to create that consistency on a daily basis. And you create the consistency by setting the bar really low sometimes. You know?
Yeah. Well, I know that one of the other aspects of that is, too, that once, for example, I used to say I didn't have the discipline for doing a certain thing, and I can't even remember what it was. I've never had really problems with my weight per se, but it's other things. You know, I don't have the discipline to meditate. I don't have the discipline to do this or that. And yet, when I stopped saying that and I started taking a look at all the things that I do every day, and this is from the age of 19 when I got into broadcasting, and I would get up every morning and I'd go to work and I'd come home, and I started taking a look at my pattern.
Yes.
And I began to realize, you're an idiot. You are already disciplined because you get up in the morning by virtue of the alarm clock.
Wow.
You get yourself up. You get your breakfast. You head off to work. You do your job. You come home. You do your thing. And then you do it all over the next day. And now that's, I'm not speaking about being in a rut. I'm talking about discipline here.
Yes. You know, it's interesting, Richard. That's such a just a phenomenal point, because what you're saying at the end of the day is that every subject is really two subjects. You sort of have the pro and you have the con, and one of my favorite expressions is sort of like doubt, is faith that things won't work out. Doubt is faith that things won't work out. And that always sort of reminds me that it's like, well, absolutely, you think that you're not disciplined, but if you look at your life, really, you're quite disciplined about a number of things that you don't even necessarily want to be disciplined about, but it's just become a question of habit. It's almost like a ritual that you performed every single day, and now you become very good at it. And so, that, you know, often, you're so right about that, that discipline often, if you notice and look real closely at your life, you're disciplined in a lot of ways. The only question is, you know, it's a question of really developing a new habit and disciplining yourself into that sort of that new way of being. There's an entire sort of area within the positive psychology world that's focused on self-regulation. Self-regulation is really about building mental muscle. It's about discipline. And what they found is that, again, if you can just find a way to be consistent, doesn't have to be a quantum leap, doesn't have to be, you know, moving mountains. You just start where it's really easy and really simple. And if you can just do it consistently enough, eventually it will sort of snowball. And before you know it, you'll be disciplined with, you know, with a brand new habit, one that's much more supportive and empowering.
We also have little hooks that keep us disciplined in this business, and they're called the clock. And the clock tells us when it's time to go here and go there and do this and do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't even have to have discipline because the system will do it whether you want to or not. Fortunately, we're not in that particular spot, but I do want to let our listeners who are joining us right now, you are listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. My guest today is the author of Happiness from the Inside Out, the art and science of fulfillment. Becoming Full. Robert Mack is my guest, and he has put this book together for you to find that happiness that resides within you. It resides within all of us. You mentioned something rather interesting, and I wanted to follow up on it in regards to the definition of happiness. Because if I'm remembering, you used sort of the definition of someone who is, you know, you're not necessarily ecstatic and, you know, off the deep end somewhere, excited and adrenaline flowing, but you're in that state of grace, of peace, of calm. That's you're almost a sense of satisfaction, and not self-satisfaction in the big S, but knowing I'm on target. I'm right where I need to be. This feels really good.
Yeah.
Now, I want to follow up with that by saying, what about those people, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe this doesn't exist within the human psyche in this regard, but what about those people who are doing things that are, I'll put it in the category of antisocial, and then leave it at that, okay? You can take that as far as you want.
Okay.
Who have that sense of self-satisfaction in that antisocial behavior?
You know, it's such a great question, Richard. But, you know, there's an entire sort of clinical psychology world out there, and focused on personality disorders and dysfunction and whatnot. And you'll find if you look closely at sociopaths, oftentimes sociopaths are, you know, quite comfortable really in their sort of antisocial or sociopathic behavior and their pathology. And one of the things that I sort of have a very strong sort of belief about is that, you know, you can't really ever judge an experience or really judge another person until you see how that experience of that person is used. And so sometimes what we might think of sort of antisocial in one respect can inspire an entire world of people to basically choose behavior that is just the opposite of that, or choose some kind of a new political system or some kind of new way of being that basically and help people live in a way, an inspired way, and live a life that they otherwise wouldn't live. And so, you know, it's from a broader perspective, it's something that I think you have to look at it in sort of a case-by-case basis, but if we're just talking from a broader perspective, I'd say that, you know, antisocial behavior, well, we've got to get just probably into some details about it to be able to give you sort of a better idea. But I do want to be real careful, sort of, because it's very easy, I think, to judge and say, well, this person over here, this is quite antisocial behavior, and this person over here is doing something that's much more pro-social behavior, because at the end of the day, if the antisocial person isn't harming anybody, but they're enjoying their life, mm-hmm. who am I to say that they're doing something wrong? And likewise, if the pro-social person, the person that's outgoing, the extrovert, is not so much enjoying their life, but they're being as social as possible and they're doing all kinds of great things for other people, but they're miserable, I can't necessarily say that that's the best way of being either.
Yeah.
And so you've got to really get into the details. And I love the question because it inspires so much thought. But I think it's a question of looking at it from a broader perspective and saying, well, every experience, no experience should really be judged until you see how the experience is used. And sometimes society or other people use that experience in a really positive way. So maybe something horribly negative, a crime or somebody's been murdered or something horrible has happened on one hand, and then you see an entire world come together collectively and collaboratively to create a brand new world, right, because of this horrible thing that happened. And so you never really know how things will turn out, and that's why one of the things I encourage folks to do is to really try to, we call it psychological flow, but what you want to do is you want to live a life that's in accordance with your own values. Sometimes society or other people try to tell us what our values should be, and then we live in a life in accordance with those values, and then we wonder why we're so miserable, right? So you're talking about, we're talking about media or entertainment world or any of these things. They feed us ideas of what a happy life should look like, and most of us try and live lives based on those notions, and we get to the end of the road and we say, well, I've got that car and I've got the relationship that I was told I should get and I've got all these great wonderful things and I'm living the American dream and I'm absolutely miserable. Like, those are most of my clients. They come, they're very successful, they're doing things in a way that we consider very pro-social, but down deep inside they're miserable because they're not living a life in accordance with their own values.
Interesting. Now, if you've just joined us, we're talking about happiness. We're talking about finding that within ourselves. We're talking about the attitude of gratitude, if you will, and the grace that comes along with, or maybe is a synonymous with happiness. And you feel that peace, especially if you're on purpose. And I would assume, forgive me for using that word, but that you feel, Robert, that you are in right now your life's purpose, whether it's this book or you're out and about speaking to multitudes of people in seminars and conferences or conference calls or what have you, or even one-on-one with your clients.
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. That's such a great point. I think one of the things that's helped me most, I think, in my life with respect to happiness is coming to a place where I'm really clear about my values and sort of who I am. That doesn't mean those values won't change at some point in time. It doesn't mean they don't evolve. But part of that is also getting clear about my purpose. And for me, so my purpose, to a large extent, is sort of was first and foremost to be living in a way that made me happy and brought happiness to those around me. And so as I have this conversation now, absolutely, in this moment I feel very, very sort of purpose-driven. And there's no better sort of feeling than that. And purpose-driven in, to the extent where the purpose is not only sort of in what's to come, but it's in the moment in and of itself. It's like the destination is the joyful journey. And sort of when you come to that place, I think around purpose, you have a much clearer sense of where your life is headed, but also that more than that, you're enjoying the moments, one after another. And what is a happy life but a series of happy moments?
Well, I have to say this is an extraordinarily happy time for a lot of folks for a lot of different reasons. I can look back in my past especially my childhood and growing up and all of the various activities that went on around this time of the year here in my hometown of Phoenix, where we got ready for the holidays and the baking, the cooking, the presents, the Christmas caroling that we did around the neighborhood, a wide variety of different things that we did. And I look back with some not only fondness but sort of some sadness that, those days are gone and won't ever be revisited except in my own mind. But at the same time, it's those kinds of memories that really propel us into doing a lot of the things that we wind up doing in the second place, if you will, why we are where we are today. How is it, and you sort of alluded to a little bit of that on the fringes there earlier in the program, how did you get here? That actually sounds kind of strange. What the heck are you doing here? How did you get in here? Who let you in?
That's kind of how I feel sometimes, Richard. It's interesting, and I think most of my life was spent. I had two very loving parents. I love my parents absolutely to death, and I love my family so much. And I had a very supportive family. And I grew up with very high expectations. So my dad was a disciplinarian, and he worked long hours. My mom, of course, did everything at home to sort of take care of us. And they had high expectations for my brother and sister and I. And as I grew up, those high expectations just seemed to always balloon higher and higher. And at first, they were sort of, you know, they came from my parents, they came from society, but then they were very much sort of self-inflicted almost. Because as I grew older, those expectations sort of seemed to balloon, and they always seemed to outrun my experience. And so I think part of that meant that nothing I ever did was quite good enough. And so from an academic perspective, yeah, I excelled. From an athletic perspective, I did just as well as any of my peers, if not better. And I had great friends, and I always, you know, I was had a great job. I made good money. And it was, and for some reason, I met sort of with the success in an external way. And that success, in a way, really failed me because it sort of felt very empty and meaningless to an extent, and it just wasn't what I sort of expected from an emotional place. And I said, this is really sort of odd. My life, in an objective way, is so great, but in a subjective way, on the inside, it didn't feel so wonderful. And so as I looked at that paradox and really began to think about it, my depression grew and grew and grew. I just could not simply figure it out, and I came to a place in my life where I was deeply suicidal. For a couple of years, I was very deeply suicidal, and as I began thinking about taking my own life, and I began to research like ways I would actually do that. I mean, that's how sort of, you know, sort of deeply depressed I was. I came to a place where I basically decided I was gonna do it, and I was gonna do it by slashing my wrist. It was this whole thing, and I came to that place in my life, and as I began for some reason to contemplate sort of taking my own life, and what that meant to me was so odd. I had this really strange feeling of sort of serenity and peace and calm and composure, like wash over me. Like I felt totally bathed in this like peace. And I couldn't explain that. I couldn't understand it. But at that time, I said, you know what, Rob, you can put off suicide for a day. You can put it off for a week. But you need to look a little more closely at what this connection is. Like, what happened in this moment where you're feeling like this sort of almost like euphoric sense of serenity? What happened? And so as I began to look more closely, I realized that what was going on inside of me was sort of a microcosm for what was going on in society at large, that largely people were meeting with success in a very real way, and they were feeling empty because of it. And so, you know, as I say now, nothing sort of fails like success. And in the other way, sort of nothing sort of succeeds like failure. And so sort of when you come to a place in your life where you're completely failed, when that success you found is completely empty, now you're finally free to sort of take that, and you're only left with one option, which is to take that journey inward.
Yeah.
Right? You come to this place where you're like, I really have to take a much closer look at who I am. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think that most of us live our entire lives sort of strangers into ourselves, mm-hmm. and we never really meet ourselves. And,
well,
it's a problem.
I have to tell you that this program is always an extraordinary journey because we never know where it's going to go. And I always love where it goes, even though I don't know where it is. Where we're going now, if you don't mind, we actually have a phone call.
Great.
So we're going to take this phone call from a good friend of ours. Elizabeth, welcome to Tell Me Your Story. And you had a question for Robert.
Robert, hi. It's Elizabeth here. And I need your counsel on something. I lost my godmama last night, middle of the night, back home in the Midwest, and this was my mama's best friend. She was her best friend for 55 years. They spoke every day. My mom's in her 80s. The lady was in her 80s. I don't know how to counsel my mother. I wonder if you would help.
You know, that's such a great question, Elizabeth. I really appreciate it, and thank you so much for it. You know, one of the things that you have to sort of, I've come to realize, is that, you know, everybody has to go through sort of their own grieving process. So the first step is to sort of let her go through her own grieving process, realize that it might take a little time, and she has to get through it and deal with it on her own terms. And the best thing that you can do during that process is continue to be a great listener, but more than that, be an example of sort of the life and sort of the love and the sort of happiness that you want her to experience. And so if you can, in very soft ways, help her to reframe the situation so that she can see it in a more positive light. It doesn't have to be something that you want to force on her or force down her throat, but you just, in very soft ways, you help her to reframe the situation so that she comes to more of a place of appreciation and optimism about her life and where she's been and what she's had, instead of a place of sort of negativity and pessimism and cynicism. And you just do that softly by reframing conversations, by redirecting or changing the a topic here and there, and you can help her navigate this. And as you do that, you sort of model for her the kind of behavior that you want cognitively and emotionally and also from a behavioral standpoint. And as you do that over and over and over again, you'll begin to help her or sort of persuade her into this place of deeper sort of positivity and sort of appreciation and enlightenment. So I would do that. I would sort of be an example to her and model the kind of behavior and conversations that you want to have with her. Do it in a soft way. Do it in a loving way. Don't try and take the quantum leap and say that this is the best thing that's ever happened, because it simply just, it really isn't. But if you do that over and over again, she'll eventually catch on. And even if she doesn't catch on, it's okay, because you've caught on. And, and that's sort of the point of it anyway, is that when you come to this place, it's sort of contagious. We call it an emotional contagion. But it will eventually catch on with her. So just sort of try and bring yourself to this appreciative place. One of my favorite quotes, Elizabeth, I think you really like, is by Dr. Seuss. And he said something to the extent of, don't be sad it's over, be happy it happened. I just love that. You know, it's and it's really hard. It's interesting, especially when we have death in the family and it's something so painful. But we, if you think about it really closely and you look and you ask yourself, what do I truly know about death? What do any of us really know about death? We know nothing about death. Let's be honest. We know very little about death. We know lots about life. We've lived life. But those of us who have died, right, haven't really come back and given us something to sort of, they haven't been able to share their experience about death. And so we have a lot of sort of misguided ideas about what death is, and it becomes a very scary thing. But maybe, just possibly, death might be one of the best experiences you have in your entire life. It could be, you reemerging into pure positive energy. It might be you dropping an old body that's no longer working and jumping into a new one. Who knows? But the idea is to help her reframe, her notions and her ideas about life and death and just her conversations on a daily basis in a way that feels better.
I think that's neat. Another thing, too, that I was thinking of, Elizabeth, I mean, as you described the relationship that your mother and your godmother had, I think that's extraordinary. I mean, how many people can actually say that they conversed with someone literally on a daily basis?
For 55 years.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
Yeah. That's such a great point, Richard, and we're really saying very similar things. We're talking about appreciation. We're talking about finding ways and being a selective enough sifter of your environment and your reality to sift out the things that feel better, things to appreciate. One of the things that I do on a daily sort of basis, I keep an appreciation journal. I just, for 5-10 minutes every morning, I write down the things I appreciate about my life now, despite what's going on. Maybe I lost my job. Maybe I went bankrupt, and all these things are true. Maybe I broke up with a fiancé. Any of these things, I still sit down for 5-10 minutes. I just write about the things that I appreciate, and maybe that's a process you can even do with her. Maybe it's just something you do verbally.
Great idea.
You don't have to write it down.
Right. Especially with an older person, because they tend to look backwards instead of forwards. I think sometimes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, our thoughts are
with
you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And we'll look forward to seeing you on Friday.
Thanks, Richard.
Bye
bye.
Have a good weekend.
Bye bye, Elizabeth.
Bye bye.
Thank you.
Good friend of ours here on the station, and it's nice to hear from from anybody who wants to give us a call at any time. Whether we say the phone lines are open or not, you know the number, 805-564-1290. 805-564-1290. I actually made the mistake, though. I don't know that anybody caught it, giving out the wrong number, which I should have done, but nonetheless, it's one of those things.
Happens.
You get caught up in the moment, and it just blah, 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 blah. It just comes out. It just comes out.
I have a lot of those moments.
Oh, yeah. Well, happiness from the inside out, my guest Robert Mack, and we're talking about happiness and how to achieve that, and we were getting a little bit of an insight into your past and your background, and I know that especially, I actually start to feel a little strange sometimes when I hear people use the phrase, in these times. You know, 2 years ago, they were still saying, in these times, and yet, by comparison to then, these times don't look as good, but those times from here don't look so bad.
I love it, Richard. I love it, because one of the things I say, I get it from a good friend of mine, he said, these are the good old days.
Mm-hmm.
These are the days that you're going to look back and romanticize about and say, wow, remember those times. Do you remember 2009 when things were so, wonderful? And yeah, there was a recession and whatnot, but those are the good old days. Well, these are the good old days. We're living the good old days right now.
Absolutely. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And just as a reminder, if you haven't listened to the program before, we're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. We archive the programs. The radio show's page is where they will be found. And this program, like all of the others, will be available to you following the broadcast. And also a link to Robert's website. And that website just happens to be I was going to say coincidentally, there is no coincidence about
it. It was intentional.
That's right. happinessfromtheinsideout.com. Happinessfromtheinsideout.com, and I'm thankful that there are no huge words in the title or difficult words to spell, because you know it makes it that much more challenging. It was funny. You've only used the word once in the entire interview thus far that I've been able to track, and I find it fascinating that you've only used it once, and yet the buzzword that everybody wants to incorporate, and I'm considering putting it into the title of my show, you know, Quantum Paradigms for a New World. It's like, what does that mean? It is what it is, and to try to make it sound or feel or look bigger than it really is, it just seems a little disingenuous. I understand the whole marketing concept, but quantum. I haven't even understood the basic physics yet.
It's interesting, Richard. Language is such a wonderful instrument, you know, and at time it's also a very limiting. It can be a hurdle. And so you're so right. You know, one of the things with me, let's say in happiness, for instance, that's my business. I'm in the business of, let's say, happiness. But interestingly enough, so I think that word probably confuses and frustrates people more than anything else. And so I tell people, forget about happiness, forget about happy. Just reach for a better feeling. Just reach for a better feeling. Whatever it is, it's like an eye prescription test. Is it better or worse? Is it A or B? And if it's B, then go to B. You know, that's it. That's all we're working at here. We're taking very tiny little small steps. And if you keep taking those tiny small steps, before you know it, you know, you're taking bigger steps and the 1,000-mile journey's over.
Yeah.
But that's what we're after. And I can feel that too with the quantum paradigms. It seems, I know it seems so big.
Well, see, that's the other thing, is when you hear the word quantum, it makes it sound like it's enormous. And, you know, again, I'm just beginning to grasp some of the bits and pieces of this quantum concept. And that's really what the program's about, to provide people this opportunity to take the bits and pieces that they want, that work for them, that resonate for them, incorporate them into their lives, and see what happens.
Yeah. You know what, Richard, you're reminding me, I've done a bit of physics reading. I did okay in physics, but it wasn't incredible. It wasn't quantum physics, I don't think. But I do remember something about quantum physics, and that quanta, I think it was something with respect to it being the sort of the minimum unit of like a physical entity involved in interaction. So actually, I think that might not necessarily be the worst turn of phrase, quantum. Right? So we have to look that one up online. Or
absolutely. Because there are so many different definitions to a single word sometimes, or sometimes the definition sort of gets, well, you know, the old story game. You know, we have 100 people in a circle, and I'm going to start the story here. And Robert Mack is a remarkable person. And when it comes back around to Robert, who's Robert Mack?
Right.
You know? Or the raccoon went up the magpie tree. Okay, that's how it could get distorted. Well, to avoid any further distortions, we're going to take a short break. I'm Richard Dugan with Robert Mack, author of Happiness from the Inside Out. That is also the web address, add.com to that, happinessfromtheinsideout.com, and it's the art and science of fulfillment. I'm Richard Dugan. Paradigms for a New World will be coming your way in just a moment.
This is Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, your clear voice for science, nature, and people in a complex world.
Our radio program covers a wide array of topics, including astronomy, oceanography, earth science, the environment, and sustainability. You can hear Earth and Sky daily in Santa Barbara, right here on AM 1290, the Santa Barbara News Press radio station.
Do your thoughts center on regret and resentment? Do you feel lost with all the joy drained out of your life? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
remember the stories your family used to tell?
Till I got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close. Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. I may want to get you a man's load right now until the go, no go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the freshest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Tell me your story, new paradigms for a new world. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Robert Mack, author of Happiness from the Inside Out, the art and science of fulfillment. And maybe around Thanksgiving time, you felt as though you were fulfilled considerably, or maybe just stuffed. I don't know which. But we're talking about happiness, and I have to say that getting to that level is not a real happy feeling. I've been there in my earlier days, and I have since learned not to do that anymore, and it's a much happier Thanksgiving, I must say. Robert, as we come close to the end of our program here on Tell Me Your Story, again, I want to guide our folks to your website, which is happinessfromtheinsideout.com. The question that I'd like to have you wrap up our program in the last couple of minutes with is, I've read your bio, and I've seen that you've done a lot of stuff. I mean, some of the stuff that we've all done, you know, whether it's been a cashier or flipping burgers or whatever the jobs descriptions are, as well as being jobless, and we've all been there too.
Yeah.
And now you're doing this.
Yes.
Why this? Why now?
Boy. You know, I think I'd say why this is because if there's one theme that's sort of run through my life, it's been the theme of really happiness and success and how those two things sort of play to each other and they play against each other in some ways. So I think unhappiness has always been something that I've tried to work out within myself, and so it sort of seemed natural. I think why now? Really because, well, why not now, I guess? But even beyond that, I think if you look at, like we talked about this, some of the science and statistics before, but we have more unhappy people than ever before in the world. And a lot of folks are looking at the recession and saying, well, it's due to the recession, or it's due to swine flu, it's due for the... But the truth is that people have been unhappy for a very, very long time before any of the recession, before any of the swine flu, before any of that. And it's just now that... so what's happening, I think, is that the flip side of that is that there's also more of an opportunity for people to experience the kind of happy, healthy, and wealthy life that they've been looking for their entire lives. Of course, it's something that comes from the inside out. And so for me, it really, that sort of notion inside out is both, it's really at least two-pronged. One prong is that, well, it's come from my own life experience, and it's something that I've lived my entire life. And the other prong is that, well, we've tried it the other way. We've tried finding a way to be successful, hoping that it would create a happy life. And that just hasn't been true and hasn't sort of proved itself out for most people in the world. So you've got to sort of take a different approach.
Well, I thank you so much for taking the approach of joining us here on Tell Me Your Story to share your story and the advancements in happiness that you are making for yourself and those who come to you and ask for your support and your assistance and your facilitation. And we hope that you'll come back again.
Oh, Richard, I absolutely love the show. I love you, buddy. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
You
really
bet.
Appreciate it.
Stay on the line. We'll be with you in just a moment. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. Join us every Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time and on the web at richarddugan.com. Until next Saturday at this same time, love to Lal. And